that a 14-year-old kid runs out the house naked with his behind bleeding, and some people see that and they call the police, and the police don't do nothing about it and put the kid back in the killer's hands. That's I don't understand that at all.
This is their second painful encounter with Jeffrey Dahmer in less than 3 years. In 1988, Dahmer was convicted of fondling Conorak's brother. Dahmer was placed on probation for that offense. Since then, he's had more contact with Milwaukee police. In September of 1988, a man he picked up accused Dahmer of stealing his wallet and jewelry. No charges were filed. Later that year, Dahmer was the victim of a battery that was also reported to police. In September of 1990, Dahmer was held up at gunpoint at a bus stop. Police questioned him about the incident in his apartment. Thursday, the police chief said no one could go in that apartment and not notice something was wrong. Today, he appeared shaken at the thought Jeffrey Dahmer slipped through his police force's hands time and time again.
The Chicago Police Department acknowledged today it heard rumors that a serial killer was stalking the gay community on our own city's north side. Word began spreading 6 weeks ago that gay young men were missing from the area. One was 23-year-old Jeremiah Weinberger, who is among the victims of Jeffrey Dahmer. Police say even though they heard the rumors, there was no hard evidence to back any of it up.
We base what we do on facts, on reported crime, and we really didn't see anything to qualify those rumors.
Some residents complained that the police ignored the rumors because they were coming from the gay community, a charge that authorities deny. Police say there were similar rumors last November when a dismembered body was found in the 4300 block of North Kenmore. Authorities have ruled out any connection in that death to Jeffrey Dahmer.
Bill, we're live outside Jeffrey Dahmer's backyard where the excavation work continued today. Police did find two more bones, but they're also digging into Jeffrey Dahmer's past, trying to find out why he may have started killing. They're investigating everything from the Dahmer's parents' divorce to occult worship here in the backyard, and in now a new revelation, charges that Dahmer was abused sexually as a child. Ohio prosecutors confirm they are checking but find no record of any molestation of Jeffrey Dahmer as a child.
No, not at this time. Our investigation hasn't turned up anything of that nature.
Police are also investigating Jeff Dahmer's obsession with the occult. In among the bones found the past 2 days are animal skeletons. Prosecutors say neighbors have told police of finding sacrificed animals and have turned in pictures of the discoveries to police.
It's my understanding that they have pictures of animals that were killed. And it appears that the killing was in some type of ritualistic process, if you will.
Jeffrey Dahmer, shown here in his prom date outfit, Wyatt Earp tie and all, was a high school oddball, and to his only teenage girlfriend, he was a frightening young man. Bridget Geiger went to the Revere High School senior prom as Jeff Dahmer's date. She was a sophomore, he was a senior. The prom date went fine. Dahmer was quiet and polite. But later at his parents' house, where police have now found human bones buried in the backyard, Geiger says she ran for her life as Dahmer and her friends called a seance and tried to talk to Satan.
They decided to hold this seance, and I was brought up Catholic, and we were told you don't challenge the occult. I've always been brought up this way. You don't challenge things like this. You think they do exist, but you just don't mess around with them.
Geiger says the group went to a dark den in the house, gathered in a circle, and just as they thought they had made contact, Geiger was spooked.
And the candle, all of a sudden, it snapped and sparked and popped, and I don't recall it looking like anybody blew it out. I didn't like this. I'm like, find the lights. I'm out of here now. This is not funny if it's a joke. And I went and stood across the street. I don't know how long till and they said when they were done, they could come out and get me.
Prosecutors are not taking the Dahmer's dabbling into the occult as a joke either. In fact, they do admit that they are investigating heavily.
Other chilling memories from Dahmer's past are still very much alive in Ohio tonight. Memories of a prom date, a seance, and a ghost. Channel 2's Jim Avila tells us that Dahmer may have participated in satanic worship.
Before there were bones in the backyard, there were ghosts in the bedroom. That's what Jeffrey Dahmer told high school friends. His only teenage girlfriend, seen with Dahmer just before their high school prom in 1978, says Jeffrey was a frightening young man. She'll never forget the party at his house, where no food, no drinks were served. The only thing on the menu was a spiritual call to the devil.
They decided to hold this seance, And I was brought up Catholic, and we were told you don't challenge the occult. The plan had been to call this guy that supposedly haunted his house.
In fact, Dahmer's high school prom date calls him an oddball and never saw him again after the seance spooked her out of the house and out of the relationship.
Some guy says, no, let's try to get Lucifer. That'd be even better. And the candle, all of a sudden, it snapped and sparked and popped. And I don't recall it looking like anybody blew it out. I didn't like this. I'm like, find the light. I'm out of here now.
Prosecutors are taking Dahmer's brushes with the occult seriously. Along with the human bones found on this property are dozens of animal bones. And police have pictures provided by neighbors of animals who were brutally sacrificed in Dahmer's huge backyard.
It appears that the killing was in some type of ritualistic.
All right, y'all. So first things first, I kind of want to use this section as a disclaimer, you know, just to let you know, this video is going to dig into the occult worship and the possibility of Jeffrey Dahmer being mind controlled, you know, and just digging into the rituals around all of his killings and the way he prepared himself to kill as well, right? So I'm not going to talk too long right here, but I do find it very odd that this series, or not many other articles that I've read that didn't have anything to do with the series, articles that were done years ago. You know, maybe if you dig more into it, you would actually find it. But I had never seen that basically there were rumors of a serial killer in Chicago, in the northern part of the city, the way that the clip said. Also, they said before the rumors even started, about 6 weeks before they started, notice that number, they found a body that was basically dismembered, which resembles the way that Jeffrey kills. Now, the series never mentioned that he was in Chicago and that there were rumors of a serial killer in Chicago. So I definitely found that interesting. Only reason I say that is because how much the police actually neglected to dig any further into basically rumors or anything that they couldn't put a hand on to tie it directly to Jeff, right? So it gives me the thought that all of this stuff was already sort of known about, and that Jeffrey was not a regular person. He was not just a random serial killer. You know, obviously we know he was in the army, but it makes me feel like that some kind of word might have been already put out, or just Jeffrey being who he was and not the normal average citizen, that they ignored it on purpose. It wasn't because they couldn't find any evidence to tie it directly to him. I feel like they actually knew who he was, you know, because we all know the police is basically a part of the fraternal order. It's one big gang, you know, and at high levels of the police force, it's all the same thing. They all work together. So it kind of made me think, you know, this could be far-fetched, but it kind of made me think that they already knew about him and they didn't stop it on purpose. You see what I'm saying? Because just the fact that he was, you know, it was rumors of a serial killer in Chicago, which is very close to Milwaukee, but we already know, you know, a lot of things went basically unknown as far as him getting into trouble in Milwaukee. The times that in that clip, when they said he was arrested, he wasn't arrested, but he was questioned for a robbery where he got robbed at gunpoint, I'm assuming it said. They said they questioned him at his apartment. If he got robbed at a bus stop, I think it was, why would they question him at his apartment? And this was in 1990, during the prime of him killing a bunch of men. And they didn't suspect anything. They didn't smell anything in the apartment at that time in 1990. Only a year later, they actually went into the apartment and dug everything up. That is very suspicious. And that throws a bunch of red flags that they already knew who Jeffrey Dahmer was. And they knew exactly what he was doing. I really feel that way, which is why, you know, we have to dig into the fact that he may have been programmed. He may have been, you know, this could have been like a military operations. We really don't know at the deep level, you know, because of a lot of these serial killers, they could very well have been MK Ultra. You know, they could very well have been programmed to kill, and they're not going to disrupt it because they're trying to actually, you know, they're trying to actually do like psychological warfare. You know what I'm saying? Even the movie that he did his rituals around was done by a psychological warfare officer, basically a part of the military. The guy that actually made the movie Exorcist 3, he was a psychological warfare officer, basically, you know, to lack of better terms for what his position actually was to the military. But that's basically what he was. And he's the guy who made the movie. So think about that. That rings MK Ultra bells. But before, you know, before I really, really go into everything that I have to say about it, we're going to check the next video clip out where Jeff basically talks about the media and how it was excuses about him, you know, doing this because of porn and sexual abuse and stuff like that. He says it himself that those are excuses. And we know that porn does not make someone a serial killer, you know. But anyways, y'all go ahead and check this next clip out.
To this day, I don't know what started it. And the person to blame is sitting right across from you. That's the only person. Not parents, not society, not pornography. I mean, those are just excuses. To this day, I don't know what started it. And the person to blame is sitting right across from you. That's the only person. Not parents, not society, not pornography. I mean, those are just excuses.
Before you went out to pick up a man, was there any kind of ritual you went through?
I'd go to the nightclubs, drink, watch the striptease shows. And if I didn't meet anyone at the bars, I'd go to the bath clubs and meet someone there, offer them money, and we'd go back to the apartment, have a few drinks. I'd have the sleeping pill mixture already prepared. Person would drink it, fall asleep, and that's when they would be strangled.
Watching the movie Exorcist 3 was also part of his ritual. It put him in the mood for murder.
I felt so hopelessly evil and perverted that I actually derived a sort of pleasure from watching that tape.
Did you like feeling evil?
No. No, I didn't. But I had tried to overcome the thoughts, and it worked for a while, but eventually I gave in.
Wasn't satisfied with his victim's death. He wanted more.
Why did you photograph them?
It was my way of remembering their appearance, their physical beauty. I also wanted to keep something. If I couldn't keep them there with me whole, I felt that I could keep their skeletons. And I even went so far as planning on setting up an altar with the 10 different skulls and skeletons.
And what was the purpose of the altar going to be?
As a sort of memorial. A point where I could, I don't know, it's so bizarre and strange, it's hard to describe. A place where I could collect my thoughts and feed my obsession.
Now, do you see the way that he speaks in that interview? He speaks as if the thoughts that he has are not of his own. You kind of have to understand where I'm coming from. And if you need to, watch that part again, or maybe watch the entire interview that he did with Inside Edition. But the way that he says, you know, it was so bizarre and how he just kind of has this nonchalant, you know, responses. It's almost as if the thoughts that he has about it, they're not of his own, which kind of gives us more feeling that this was, you know, it was more programming, mind programming than anything. Because now, obviously, someone like Jeffrey Dahmer, you know, or just serial killers in general who've killed multiple people, you can imagine that they're very calm. Because to be that way, you have no, you know, you don't have any fear. You don't have any outside emotions that are going to make you, you know, erratic or, you know, respond in ways that someone expects, like an emotional person to respond. Like, these people aren't emotional. They don't have emotions like that. So it kind of makes sense of how his demeanor is when he's explaining it so calmly. But the way that he responds to, like, he says he doesn't know a bunch of times. And the way he explains his own actions is as if the thoughts that he has or the mental state he had while he was doing it, it's almost like he doesn't even really understand it himself. But he knows it's not what the media is saying. It's not because of abuse and because of, you know, porn and so on, like we were saying earlier. So it, in my mind, it kind of gives, you know how, because when you're under mind control, when you're under that MK Ultra, most of the time, the victims, the people that are under mind control, they don't actually remember what they're doing when they are doing it. And they go into like a state of trance. And there's always something that triggers that trance, which is why this next clip is going to be very important to the entire video and the entire ritual of what he would do when watching The Exorcist 3, because that could have very well been his trigger for his mind programming, because they say that he watched it 2 to 3 times a day for 6 months straight. Catch those numbers. Now, when we watch this next testimony of the guy that actually escaped Dahmer, and when he escaped, he brought the police back to, you know, finally catch Dahmer. If y'all remember the first episode, we're going to watch the testimony of the guy that escaped. So basically, this is the dude from the first episode of the Netflix series that, you know, he was trying to be friendly with Dahmer, taking his clothes off and telling him to take pictures so he could escape. That guy. We're going to watch his testimony, and he's going to further explain how Jeffrey Dahmer went into the ritual process as he was watching The Exorcist 3 before he basically attempted to murder the guy. And it's gonna, you know, it's gonna feed our narrative a little bit more to why this may have been his trigger to go into, you know, this basically may have been his MK Ultra trigger that, you know, sort of morphs him into another person, and then he takes over and he wants to, you know, he wants to kill. So with that being said, check this next clip out.
At the time that you look at him and you say, what's going on? You don't have to do this. What happens to Mr. Dahmer? What's he like?
It's like not the same person that we met at Grand Avenue Mall.
How does he different?
His face structure seemed different. You know, his body structure is like it wasn't him anymore. His
face structure seemed different.
You know, his body structure is like it wasn't him anymore. You know, it's like it was a totally different guy there.
So he told you if you didn't do what he told you to do, he'd hurt you.
He'd hurt me.
What'd you do? What happened? Tell us what happened step by step as best you can remember.
And then all of a sudden he kind of calms down, you know, and then he said he has a key in the bedroom. So we proceed to the bedroom.
The key to the handcuffs.
Right.
Yeah. So you believed he was going to take him off?
Yeah. At that point, I had to go along with this guy, you know, and then if I had to find out, so I walked back there with him. He kind of guides me back there, you know.
Guides you back with the cuff and the knife?
Yeah, right.
And you go into the bedroom?
A big, about 50, 60 gallon drum, barrel, whatever.
Do you ever see a 50, 60 drum barrel in anybody's bedroom before?
Not at all.
Do you have any idea? Did you ask him what it was?
No. At that point, I asked no questions at that time. You know.
Was there a bed in that room?
Yes.
How was the bed? Was it made, unmade?
It was unmade.
What did you see on the bed, if anything?
Something like a stain of whatever, on the bed.
What did you think it was?
At that point in time, I wasn't sure.
What did you do when you got in the bedroom as he's holding on to the cuff and the knife? What did you do?
I'm studying us talking, trying to be friends with him.
Did you remain standing? Did you sit down?
Oh, he made me sit down at that point. We both sit on the bed.
Was it at the foot of the bed, side of the bed, head of the bed?
Maybe halfway between.
Did that room have a TV set in it?
Yes.
Was there anything going on the TV?
Yeah, the Exorcist movies was playing at that time.
There was an Exorcist movie on?
Yeah.
You know which one of them?
The name, I'm not sure. I think it's 3. I'm not sure which one.
So there was a movie. Did you know it to be part of television or VCR?
VCR, normally that's not on regular television, so I thought it was VCR.
You knew there was a movie showing?
Right.
Did you see him put it on, or was it on?
No. When we first got into the apartment, he went through the back, to the back bedroom. Maybe he put it on then, I'm not sure.
Okay. And then what happened? You're both sitting on the bed?
Yes.
Are you still in handcuffs?
Yes.
Is he holding the handcuff?
Right.
Do you still have the knife?
Right.
Is it pointed at your side, as you've told us before?
Right.
You trying to be cool?
Very much so.
You're not fighting with him?
No.
What's your intention? What are you planning on doing?
Getting away. I was contemplating on a point jumping out the window. You know, I was basically talking with this person, trying to let him know I was his friend. Yeah.
As you were sitting there on the bed, when he had you by the handcuff and a knife at your side, at that time, which would have been maybe 7 o'clock?
Something like that.
What impression was made upon your mind by the conduct, action, manner, expression, and conversation that you observed of Mr. Dahmer?
His frame of mind is what you want to know, right? Okay, he acted, at times he would go through like different changes with me, you know?
Tell us about that.
1 minute he's like nice, then he was telling he didn't want people to leave him or abandon him. Things of this nature, you know? Yeah.
Well, what did you think about him as a person? What impression was made on your mind of this fellow that you're dealing with here?
Yeah, that at times he wasn't himself, and then at times he was like a nice guy, you know? He would come and go different times, you know, throughout the whole time. Then he would like sit being quiet at times, watching a movie, wanting me to watch the movie, you know, and just doing little tanning sounds, you know?
Did you observe him watching the movie and how he would react to the movie?
Right, he would like just start rocking back and forth when he, you know, certain parts of the movie or whatever.
You have to say, what did he say, Madam?
He was like chanting at certain times and rocking back and forth, right?
Tell us about his chanting. What was that all about?
I'm not even sure, sir, but it was just like, I can't tell you the words. I couldn't understand what he was saying. At that time.
Can you mimic him, how it sounded?
It was like a slow slur, like some of that nature, some close like that, I'm not sure.
Did it keep on for a period of time?
Off and on throughout the ordeal.
And how about the movement back and forth? How was that being effectuated?
Just like back and forth, he would do it every now and then. You know?
Just as you are rocking in your chair.
Like this.
And chanting.
And chanting.
Was there any parts of the movie that was going on that you saw that he said anything about?
It was like the part about the preacher that used to be a preacher that had got possessed and that it would seem like he was like interested in that part. That part had his attention more than anything.
Yeah. Well, tell us about what you mean by that. What impressions were made upon your mind when this was going on, as to had his attention? How did he appear to you?
It appeared like it was like he wanted to mimic it or be like that part, you know, being demonized or whatever in that nature.
I'm sorry, I missed
you. Yeah, like he wanted that type of movie, that part, certain parts of that part interested him. you know. It was like he changed with it at times. Then he would get more aggressive, try to get me to handcuff myself, both hands. And he's told me it made him feel more dominant.
Reported. Documents are now public record because I have them, and they just contradict. Now, Jeff said, I didn't like to see my victims go through pain. These people were alive when Jeff was cutting them up, and he kept them alive. It was at the end I wrote, Rotten Hell, Jeffrey Dahmer.
Russell, he kept them alive. He enjoyed it. He enjoyed what he did to me. He kept them alive with a thoracostomy tube, a breathing tube. He severed the spine at certain areas, many of his victims, so they couldn't get away or couldn't move or couldn't whatever, you know, and stuff like that. You know, it's all crazy. I could see where one of them had a tracheostomy. You know, it's all crazy. And there's another thing called a cricothyrotomy. I mean, you got all these things that he was doing, you know, and he knew that stuff better than anybody, probably, as well as a physician, probably. I mean, he's just dissecting people while they're alive. People, you know, they don't get the sympathy for Jeff Dahmer should not be there. When he would beat me and then he would rape me, or he would rape me and then beat me, it was confusing. I didn't know what to expect. I got tied to a bunk, given drugs, all that kind of crazy stuff. You know, he would get beside me, and he even told me he loved me one time. You know, I mean, stuff like that. And this guy was sick, okay? Somebody, and I think you know who I'm talking about, had trained this guy. He was not a regular guy, a regular 18, 19-year-old kid. He was not, okay? He had many years of training. For his age, I don't see how he had that much knowledge.
Now, to come in and wrap up the last part to this video, the last clip that just went off, I found that to be really interesting, although it was a short clip. It was basically told by a guy that was one of the victims of Jeffrey Dahmer that that escaped death, basically, right? Now, he kind of said what I've been thinking all along and what some of you may have thought as well, at the fact that, you know, how I was explaining earlier that this might have been some kind of military op as far as the connection between some of these serial killers. Because, as he said, Jeffrey was not a regular 18 or 19-year-old kid. And we don't mean just, oh, he was crazy because he was a serial killer. No, we mean he wasn't regular by the fact of how much knowledge he had to be able to, you know, dissect the bodies the way that he did. And the guy explained that he was dissecting the bodies as if, you know, he was some sort of physician, as if he had years of training on how to do it and how to keep them alive. You know, this wasn't just someone that just came across a couple of drugs and just decided to, you know, I'm gonna drug you, I'm gonna, you know, put you to sleep, basically, so you don't feel these things. When he's right, at the end of the day, we don't really know that that's the way that it went. Now, the show gave us they kind of really centered around him drugging the victims so they didn't feel him, you know, dismembering the bodies and so on and so on. You know, because if he did it any other way, it would be considered even more gruesome already than what it is. Although, you know, there's not much, you know, there's not much that he could have done that would have made it any more gruesome. But at the end of the day, there was definitely something deeper that will probably never be disclosed, because he wasn't, like he said, this wasn't just a normal guy. This wasn't just a teenager who just decided to sacrifice animals and dissect animals from a young age, that he did it so much that he was able to perform things that only, you know, that only physicians and doctors and so on could perform on a dead body. You know, because they weren't finding out some of these things until they ran autopsies on the body on how he actually dissected the body. So it makes sense that he had some kind of prior knowledge, some kind of prior training, so he was actually able to do what he did. And now we all know he was in the army. He did a stint in the army. I'm assuming that it was something medical wise that he did in the army, but we don't know, you know, we don't know the extent that it went to and what he could have been a part of before going into the army or after going into the army, you know, because then it goes and it ties his situation and, you know, his entire story to John Wayne Gacy, which we have here on the screen now. And the sort of, you know, ritual occult connection that these two have to each other is the fact that the day that John Wayne Gacy was executed, Jeffrey Dahmer, he was baptized on that same day. Now, a lot of you may know this and you may have seen it in the show. What makes this sort of an eerie connection is the fact that that day there was a solar eclipse. So we know during a solar eclipse, the veil is practically non-existent. I don't even want to say it's very thin. The spiritual world is, you know, easily accessible during a solar eclipse. So in the fact that John Wayne Gacy was being executed the same day that Dahmer was being baptized in order to, you know, I guess, cleanse his soul and be prepared to, as they said in this article, meet his maker, it gives us the idea that their stories and what they did is sort of connected to each other. They may have not physically known each other or even physically met each other, because I didn't find that in any article that they actually met each other. But just that the fact that there's a link between them up under a solar eclipse tells us a lot more than we ever really knew. When we know John Wayne Gacy, he has... And he basically has occult numerology, Freemason numerology to his killings as well. He killed 33 boys and men. Catch that number, 33. Together, they killed 50 young boys and men. Dahmer, 17. John Wayne Gacy, 33. It reads, the day March 10th, 1994, that links the two murderers who killed 50 young men and boys between them was made all the more strange by there being a solar eclipse. Gacy marked the end of his life with a defiant send-off, telling those gathered to see his execution, quote-unquote, kiss my ass. Born on March 17th, 1942, John Wayne Gacy began his crime spree with a string of sexual assaults for which was convicted in 1968. He would lure his victims in with the promise of construction work, which they kind of painted that picture in episode 10 of the Jeff Dahmer Show. Says Gacy terrorized the Chicago area for 6 years. Catch that number, 6 years, until 1978. And earned his chilling killer clown nickname after it emerged that he worked as a clown prior to his crimes. Now I want you to remember, there was rumors of a serial killer. Remember in the beginning of the video, there was rumors of a serial killer that was related to Jeffrey Dahmer in Chicago as well, on the north side of the city. But the killings, they matched up to the way Jeffrey Dahmer killed his victims, because they found a body that was dismembered. Not the way John Gacy killed. And plus, if I'm not mistaken, I think Jeffrey Dahmer's first kill was in 1979, but that was not in Chicago. But there's a relation, just because Jeffrey Dahmer was supposedly in Chicago just as well as John Gacy years ago, you know, prior to Dahmer starting his spree of killing. It says John Wayne Gacy, his first victim was a 16-year-old Timothy McCoy, who he stabbed to death after picking him up from a bus terminal. It was at his Chicago home where he would claim his victims. He would trick boys and young men into his house and pretend to perform a magic trick for him, often in his clown persona. Also goes on to say he would then bury many of his victims under his house. Now, if you remember with Jeffrey Dahmer, he also attempted to put a victim under his house, and he would have those dead animals under his house as well. So that's another connection in between the two serial killers. It says police were investigating the disappearance of teenager Robert Pice, with Gacy the last person thought to have been with the 15-year-old, when they made a gruesome discovery. They came across the bodies of 29 boys and young men, while four other bodies were found in the Des Plaines River. The smell of the bodies had been building up for years, but Gacy dismissed the questions by saying it was just a buildup of damp. Also, in another strange coincidence, Gacy was arrested in 1978. The same year, Dahmer Dubb, the Milwaukee cannibal, killed his first victim. So, do you see the connection? The day that Gacy died, Dahmer was baptized, basically, you know, in a sense, reborn again. Also in 1978, when Gacy was arrested, Dahmer killed his first victim. So it's kind of like, you know, that's almost duality in a sense. One down, one up. Then when Gacy dies, one down, one up again for Dahmer getting baptized. Although Dahmer was arrested, I mean, he was in custody. And, you know, he was basically locked up. But still, that's duality in a sense right there. So that lets us know Gacy and Dahmer, this is all occult. This is all satanic occult worship. These two were not random serial killers. They were a part of the occult, both of them. Because there's too much here that aligns with occult numerology and just the way that it all works, the way that it all goes down. There's too much duality in between them too. We'll keep reading. Just to wrap this video up. Nickname, the Milwaukee Cannibal. Dahmer killed and dismembered at least 17 men and boys between 1978 and 1991. He murdered and dismembered 17 males over a 13-year period before he was apprehended by authorities at the end of the time of his arrest. They came across 7 skulls, 2 hearts, severed hands, skeletons, and dismembered torsos, along with Polaroid photos of the victims, saws, knives, a drill, and acid. Now, for the last part of this video, when we get into the Polaroid photos, we can't leave out, I don't want to show this photo too long, so I'm going to show it for a little bit just in case this gets flagged and I'm going to black the screen out. This photo is called the Ancient of Ancients. Now, there was a reason that this photo was one of the photos they showed in the series. You remember in the first episode when the cop went through the photos and they showed this picture of the body, one of the bodies that Jeff had, you know, he'd already cut the dude's head off. And he's in the same pose of this sculpture here that's inside of Tony Podesta's home. Now, this was one of those politicians that was involved in that whole scandal with the Clintons and all of the child sex trafficking stuff and so on and so on. Not going to go too far in that because I don't want to, you know, ring off any keywords in the algorithm. But this right here is more occult symbolism that, you know, that basically fuels what we think this to be, that Jeffrey Dahmer was not just some random serial killer. He knew what he was doing. He worshipped Lucifer. He was a part of a satanic cult that all of these people, including these politicians, the Podestas and the Clintons, and that all of them are a part of. Once again, this pose is called the Ancient of Ancients. And as you see right here, it is inside of Tony Podesta's home. That sculpture doesn't have a head, y'all. This is not Tony Podesta, you know, being a fan of Jeffrey Dahmer. No, this is occult imagery. These are things that draw in darkness. This is basically, this is an offering right here. That's why Dahmer wanted to create altars to offer these bodies and these cut up parts to Lucifer himself. That is what this is. This is very dark energy. This is very dark occult imagery here. And basically the entire thing around it all is just, you know, it's just one giant piece of darkness. And at the end of the day, the way that, you know, our generation is playing with all of this stuff on TikTok and thinking that all this stuff is a joke is quite actually sick. And they don't understand the full tilt of how dark this stuff actually goes. All right, y'all. So, you know, I hope y'all enjoyed this video. I definitely feel like we unearthed some things that weren't necessarily talked about in the series, things that they wouldn't dare touch on, because it then raises a lot more questions than just him being a normal, you know, well, not normal, but him just being a, you know, a regular serial killer that just woke up and decided to do this one day. So y'all let me know what y'all think in the comments. We'll get a conversation going back and forth as always, man. Y'all already know what's going on. It's Black Balloon. And I'm gonna see y'all soon. I'm out.